No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the conversation by calling in at 888-628-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIO and the number one. Maria, are you with us? My favorite Republican and favorite Californian, Maria Sanchez.
And
how
Senator,
are you? How was it? You have a good week?
I have to say, I tinkered with my LinkedIn profile today, and I put socially liberal Republican.
Socially liberal. Well, that's good.
Yeah. And and as we've said on other broadcasts, you and I have more in common than we don't. We have more we agree on than we disagree upon. And so you must be more conservative in as a Democrat, and I am definitely very liberal as a Republican. In fact, some of my Republican friends say I might as well just stop the charade and put a D after my name.
Well, you know what? I just think we're right-thinking people. That's all. You know, that's the thing we have in common, is that we have, you know, we think about things appropriately, and let that be let us be an example to Congress, right?
Yeah, common sense.
Yeah, right. You guys can get along. You don't have to be at opposite poles all the time. And I think that's what happens a lot in America, right? We say, we put that label on, conservative, liberal, Democrat, Republican, whatever it is, and all of a sudden we think that defines us. And I think for a lot of people it's true that it doesn't, that those labels don't define us.
Well, interestingly enough, just let me interject, if you don't mind. Some of the listeners may know I'm studying for my PhD in media psychology, and we've been studying cyberbullying, fake news. And just this week, I've started to study digital citizenship. And it's really interesting why it gets so divisive. And I'm developing a digital citizen curriculum to educate people on how to engage in healthy discourse, even if you disagree.
Wow, that would be wonderful to see that happen. And just as we're talking about political discourse, let me mention that, give a shout out again to Californians. You know, if you're involved in politics in the Democratic Party and you don't love the people of California, there's something wrong with you, because they're always doing something for us. And Kamala Harris, Senator from California, signed on to our statehood bill. Yes, she did. And so did Patrick Leahy, longtime senator from Vermont.
Wow.
Leahy has been a supporter in the past of other initiatives to empower the people of District of Columbia. But Senator Harris, this is a new step for her, you know, because she's a relatively new senator.
Very.
And we just want to thank them both for caring about the people of the District of Columbia.
And guess what? I voted for her.
All right, Maria.
And guess why?
Again, proving that you're brilliant. Go ahead. Why?
Because California, in our primaries, it's the two top vote getters, and the two top vote getters were both Democrats. And so I had to choose between one or the other. Of course, I could have abstained. But she did a great job for the state of California, and I'm sure she's going to continue to do that in the Senate.
Well, and you know what? Here in the District of Columbia, it's funny because I've been out getting petition signatures to get on the ballot. And here in the District of Columbia, all it is Democratic primary. I don't think I've ever heard of anybody that won the Democratic primary that did not win the general election because we have so many Democrats in D.C. So I know we hear from Republicans in D.C. all the time about it. You know, the, oh, I don't even know why I bother to vote.
And, I bet. Well, California is similar. The Democrats are in every position.
And what we'd like to do, what I'd like to see done, because we have more and more independents who are registered, I'd like to see independents be able to vote in either primary.
And the reason I would register, because of that. I want to vote in the primary.
Right, of course. And you know, and independents should be able to, you know, if you're independent, you're independent. You should be, I think, you should be able to choose in the primary any candidate you want, just like you can in the general election. Well, speaking of people, important people, we have a guest tonight, a great guest, Kadori. Kadori has just written a book about women, to empower women. And let me see, I'll find the title here in a second. Woman, Put Yourself First and Be Happier. And this is a book to empower women, and we want to talk to her about it. She has several businesses. She's an entrepreneur. She's also somebody that gives back to the community. She started a nonprofit group that helps people. So let's have her on the show, and let's find out what's happening. Let's talk about women.
Yay.
Kadori, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
Hey, welcome. Thank you for being on the program, Kadori, and also for promoting this really important topic. And as we were saying before the broadcast, Michael is really evolved and in touch with his feminine side, which is great for me as his co-host. But I think what women do is we always default to others in general first because of our caregiving instincts and maybe because we've been mothers. And so your message is so empowering that if we don't take care of ourselves first, how can we be good to others?
Absolutely. Yes. Well, when I thought about a title for the book, I'm a registered nurse by profession. I've been a nurse for 20 years. So when I thought about the book and thought about some titles, I just looked at my profession and in my personal life. And what I noticed was most women, when they hit the age of 35, 40-ish, they start to get in tune with themselves a little more because all of their lives they've given to their children, their husbands, their jobs, everything else, and they didn't put themselves on the list anywhere. And this cuts across all financial and racial barriers because I take care of patients from all over the world, and I myself was included in that. So I thought about it, and I said, I want to do something to empower women and let them know that, you know, I really want to reach the girls, teenagers in the early 20s, and let them know, hey, it's okay to learn who you are on the front end of life. It's never too late to do it, but how awesome would it be if you're, you know, 16, 17, 18, and you're getting in touch with yourself and you know who you are before you get into these really deep relationships and start giving yourself away, as opposed to 35, 40 years old. Now you're getting in tune with yourself. And I always use the example, for those of us who fly, because I've flown a lot over the years, what do they tell you when you get on the airplane? In the event of an emergency, put your oxygen mask on first. It doesn't matter if you have a kid, a husband, whoever. You have to put yours on first, otherwise you're going to be oxygen deprived and you're going to die. So that's the basis of the book, is just empowering and motivating women and girls.
Well, I think, you know, as a father of two daughters, I, you know, that's a message that I embrace and you know, I've certainly seen it in raising my girls. They're much more empowered today, I think, than they were years ago, but they're still not like boys. You know, they're still, they still take a back seat generally, and they still, you know, the opportunities are there, but, you know, I used to watch the kids play soccer. And when they were little, I saw the boys. My son was a really good soccer player, and both my girls played soccer. But the boys attacked the ball constantly. The girls played with a lot more finesse. They kicked the ball, they waited. They kicked the ball, they – you know what I mean? They they didn't charge forth. And the few girls that did, well, they were the stars of the team. Yeah, I think women have to learn especially young women, you're right, to stand up and charge forward. But Maria, you should be an expert on this because you're charging forward every day. You're working on your PhD.
But what Kadori said is I spent decade. First of all, I'm the eldest of four. So by the time my youngest brother was born, there was 10 years between us. I became his mom. You know, yeah, my mom had him, but as far as I was concerned, I was his mom. So I've been caregiving since that young. Actually, I started babysitting my other siblings when I was 7. That was back in the day when that was okay. Yeah. So then I go on to get married, and then I have 4 children, and then I'm a single mother when my children are 2, 4, 6, and 8. So, of course, they took the priority, as they should have. And that's why I'm a late bloomer, because I didn't do what you're suggesting, Kadori. I did keep thinking about others, and I can only imagine. I don't have regrets, but like you were saying, Michael, if your daughters don't take those opportunities, it doesn't mean that they won't be there for them later. But look at how much time I missed not doing it when I applied for my master's in between child 3 and 4 and started it then. That was 25 years ago.
Yeah. That was my wife too. Had a bachelor's degree, got her master's degree after our youngest child was, our youngest of 3 was, you know, maybe in 2nd grade or 3rd grade. But you know, Maria, for being the oldest of 4 is one thing. But Kadori was the oldest of 13. Is that right, Kadori? Oldest girl, 13?
Well, there's 13 total. Me and my oldest brother. Yeah. I have a brother older than me. We've been miniature parents. We laugh about it now, but we say we never had a childhood. There was a baby almost every year. So when my parents would leave, which was most of the time, we would be left with the child. We were responsible. So since I've been about 7 or 8, I've been taking care of kids. And then I went off to college for a couple years, got married, and started my own family. So it's the same scenario that Maria was talking about. It just happens over and over again. And then, of course, I wasn't taught in my home to, you know, I was taught more of a caregiver type role and, you know, just submissive type role. And later in life, I thought, oh, no, I have a lot to offer, and I want to do more than what society said that women can do. So that's why I'm going around empowering women and girls now, because I see it all the time. Doesn't matter what race or, you know, culture you are or income level, it's almost the same trend all over, you know?
And yeah, interesting, too, that you chose a profession that's caregiving by its very nature.
Exactly.
I mean, from your family of origin. To your own family, to your profession, that's all you did was take care of others.
Exactly. And I just recently, like last year when I published this book, I published it at Book Expo BookCon in New York in June of 2017, which is the largest book convention in America every year. And I did it on a large platform. And just ever since then, all these things I had inside of me, I've been writing since I was in high school, but I never published anything. So I'm like, you know what? I got to get busy doing all these other gifts and talents that I have and just do them myself. Because we all have something, you know, and you need to tune into that early. The earlier in life you tune into it, the better, I believe. And I see it all the time in women and girls, and we're just kind of fearful and, you know, kind of standing back in the shadows. And I'm just there to kind of help encourage and pull out those talents and gifts you have and not be fearful. You know, just come out. Because there's only one you. So once you're gone, there will never be another replica of you on this earth. So I teach that in my, you know, speaking and empowerment. And I also say, be bold about who you are and be confident. Because if I'm being you, who's going to be me? And if you're being me, who's going to be you? So we got to learn how to be our own self and stand in that truth. And don't be afraid and don't compare yourself to anybody else. Because that fear will forever hold you back. So that's how I run my, you know, empowerment speaking.
Go ahead, Maria.
I was going to say, Kadori, how did you take the courage to make a change up from one day who you were to this day who you are? Was there a single moment, or was it a culmination of things, or a frustration, or what was the switch?
It was a combination of things. You know, I always had it inside of me, and fear is the number one thing that holds people back. But in 2010, I lost my oldest son to a motorcycle accident. So losing my son, the year after I lost my son, I found myself getting, like, mental health and an outpatient therapy because I thought I was going to lose my mind. And I knew in the beginning that we were extremely close, that I didn't want to be on any prescribed medicine or any drugs, so I knew I had to get some help and do work for myself. So it was a long journey from that point. And then, you know, over the course of the last 4 or 5 years, I got more in tune with who I was. And then, like I said, I've been writing since I was in high school, but I never published anything. So I just got to the point one day where I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to go for it. And who is it to be afraid of? Like, who has the answers? Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody does. So while you're thinking that you're scared someone else is going to say this or that, they're thinking that you're scared. In the meantime, the gifts and talents are going by the wayside. So I just
well,
up
know,
and just did it.
Well, and you know, the thing that thing you say is so important. I have a friend that told me one time, this is the difference between men and women. A woman goes to the doctor's and she gets off on the sixth floor and the doctor's office isn't there and she thinks to herself, gee, I got off on the wrong floor. A man does the same thing. He gets off on the sixth floor and the doctor's not there and he thinks to himself, damn, the guy moved. You know, and that's the difference, right? Guys are
right.
That confidence makes so much difference. And when I look at things, you know, when I look at things, I say to myself, well, if he can do it, I can do it. I don't think women do that all the time.
I
mean? Yeah, and I think that really holds them back. Well, I've got to ask you this question, Kidori, and this is also a question for Maria, because my chief of staff gets on my back all the time about nomenclature, that I say congressman. You know, I'm an old guy. I'm 64 years old, so I say congressman, or I say hero, and she says shiro, and I say heroes and shiros.
Don't say postman,
you know,
or fireman. Yeah.
I do. I'm an old guy. Firemen, no, not anymore. They've really changed that. First responders and things like that. But I do. How important do you think the nomenclature is that we say those things? Do you think we really need to change that?
I think we do, and I just think it starts in the home of how you're raised and the things that you see and learn. Like I said, I wasn't taught to stand up and be bold and speak out. And then, of course, society as a whole doesn't really embrace that in women, period. It doesn't matter what level of education you have. It's just something that has to be taught. And then if you don't have someone to teach you that, then you got my book and other inspirational women out here that are trying to change that. You know, in men, I raised my sons differently, where they know across the board there's mutual respect. There's no, you know, the man is over here doing this, and you can't do this. You need to go over here and be quiet and sit down and not be heard, you know, that type of thing. So it does start in the home, but also society. But I do believe that, yeah, the wording of things and, you know, just kind of not looking at women on the same level a lot of times does, you know, it's very important. I think it's very important.
I actually agree. And to me now, I have become so sensitive, which I'm not usually, I kind of have let things roll off my back. But when I hear that kind of thing, the man thing especially, it's like nails on a chalkboard, which I don't know if our younger listeners could even identify with what that sounds like, because we have grease boards
well,
now.
You know what?
But
yes, exactly.
It jumps out at me, and I think it was they were playing a couple of clips of Billy Graham when he passed away about some of his talk. And, of course, he was 99 years old, so, of course, he's going to say those things that we said back in the day. And I hear it. It jumps out at me. It's just like if you would say Chinese instead of Asian. Or, you know, I mean, it just is, to me, it's as simple as that. You don't. That's not what we do anymore. I know it's politically correct, but I also think, Michael, the formation of your question is it also reinforcing the stereotypes? And I believe it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I you know, and that's certainly the feedback that I get. And I try to be sensitive. I try to say representative, but sometimes congressman slips out. And it's funny because our representative here in DC is a woman. And I know now I notice it. I notice other women that introduce her as Congressman Norton, you know,
you're kidding.
And it jumps out at me. It's like, oh my God, how can they, does she stand right there?
Can you know, not say congressman?
Yeah, or, you know, often they do, and representative or congresswoman, you know, but
or assembly member or council member.
And right. And, you know, so when you have senator, there is
right.
no, distinction. You know, you're right. There
male,
is no
female.
So maybe we need to come up with more words like that. So, Kidori, what do you think, if you had to boil down your book to one thing, what do you think is the most important thing for women, young women especially?
I think the most important thing is to love yourself. I just came out with some gear at the end of last year called I Love Me. It's important for everybody, men and women, but I find that women have the most difficulty really loving themselves. And what that looks like is that, you know, if it's something you want to do, you should do it. You shouldn't have to get everyone's approval all the time. It's almost like we have to get everybody's approval before we can go and do something. And then when you have children, like when I was raising my children, the way I was raised, I felt bad if I went into the department store and bought myself something. I was always buying for the kids. So we have to first love ourselves. And once you love yourself, then you actually have more to give others. If you pour into yourself and your cup is full, you have more to give others. But we have to first learn to love ourselves. And I think the earlier you are, the younger you are when you learn that, the better you are as a whole person coming into your adult life. So I just really promote a lot of self-love.
And what I think that I don't recall having consciousness of, but what you said really triggered something, is that the younger we can get them, the better. And what not better than adolescence, because that's selfish by its very nature, which is normal and appropriate, age appropriate. So why can't we just seize on that selfishness and maintain it to some degree?
I think we can, and that's why I try to go and talk to the junior high, even a little bit earlier ages, you know, younger ages, and just tell them, you know, who are you? Write your name down. Tell me some things that you want to do with your life. You know, tell me 5 things you love about yourself. Just start kind of putting that back into yourself, because I feel like if you can love yourself truly, you're going to attract somebody else that brings that. You know, you don't need anybody to complete you. They're going to add to that. They're going to bring, you know, you need to value yourself. What does value mean to me? All these type of words that really promote you as a whole person. That's really the essence of what I'm trying to get to. Because, you know, in my way, you know, there's a lot of teen pregnancy. And a lot of that comes from not knowing your value and your self-worth. And then you repeat those poverty cycles, because if you don't know who you are and you can't take care of yourself, why in the world would you think you can take care of a baby? And a lot of that stuff comes from feeling like you need somebody else to help complete you, or somebody else to love you because you're not loving yourself. And now what do we have? We have more teen pregnancies or young pregnancies. So it all ties into, you know, the lack of self-love somehow. And I'm targeting girls and women because you're the one that's carrying the baby. Your body's the one going through the changes, and you have to, more than likely, you might even be a single mom. More the younger you are when you have a baby, the chances are likely that you're going to be a single mom. So that's why I'm targeting women and girls more, because you're the natural nurturers, and you're the one that's going to be carrying the baby and more than likely doing the most child rearing, even when you're married, you know. So that's my target, is women and girls.
So, Michael, as a father and as a man, what do you think our society could do from your aspect, relationship?
All I know is that I always try to encourage my girls to do what, you know, to branch out and not to be afraid and to do whatever their heart felt. You know, I don't know beyond that as a parent. What you can do. I think that society, certainly, I think everything that both of you ladies are saying is true, that society really impinges upon the feelings that girls have about their ability to be able to do things. And, you know, what Kidori just talked about, gee, in D.C., I can't tell you how many people I meet in their 40s that are grandmothers, and how many girls I meet in D.C. who are 15, 16 years old that have children. I mean, it's just an amazing problem.
Right.
And it really does trap them back into the cycle of poverty. So from a policy standpoint, I don't know what we do about that. I don't know. You know, I guess that Kidori's right. It's about building up self-esteem. But, you know, I don't know how we do that from a policy standpoint. Now, you look at something like Title IX, right? That's a very positive thing for women. And the funny thing about it is that lots of girls today that are my girls' ages in their early 20s, they're not even aware what Title IX is.
It's
and how
terrible.
Important it was. Yes. But
I know that to be the case too.
Yeah.
Right.
But you
and
know,
we've
things
not
like
done
that
a job of sharing our history. And the same is true with the HIV AIDS epidemic, that the younger generations, they're very flippant about it. I know I'm making gross generalizations here, but I hear this from my gay friends, that the men who are in their 40s and 50s live through it, right? And they, if they have younger partners, the younger partners don't want to have protected sex, and they say they'll have a cure by the time if I get it, and they're like, you just sit down here and I'm going to give you a lesson in history. Because that and we've dropped the ball with what you just talked about, Michael, because they don't know. I started playing basketball. It was six girls on a team because four of us couldn't go full court because we were girls.
Right.
I mean, I've lived it. And that's in my lifetime. I remember when my mother went to get an electric hedger to do some gardening and they wouldn't rent it to her because she was a woman.
Oh, my God.
And that was in their liability laws, that they couldn't rent power equipment to females.
Oh, my God. That's just unbelievable. But I remember.
I was there when she made such a fuss. That's why I remember. I was so embarrassed that she was raising her voice. And she said, you mean this snot-nosed, long-haired punk kid next to me, who she was talking about, a young man, can rent this, but I can't, and those are my three children, because she had only three of us at the time, and you're telling me I can't rent it? He said, sorry, ma'am, it's in our insurance. Our liability won't extend to females.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, we all remember, you know, back to Title IX. We all remember, right, they've just done a movie about Bobby Riggs and, I'm sorry, the woman tennis player, Billie the great Jean woman. Yes, you know. Right. Here was a guy who was a middle-aged guy who said, I can beat this top ranked woman tennis player because she's a woman.
Exactly.
And you know, and now we look at the Olympics and we just see amazing. I got to tell you, I watched some of these ice skaters and some of these other female athletes.
The 17-year-old snowboarder.
Yeah.
She was breaking history. She's 17 years old. I'm like, oh, my goodness. She lives here in Southern California. It's like, oh, wow.
And she's texting. She's texting in between doing amazing things on her snowboard, you know. So, yeah, I think that's another thing. I think women have to see women doing it. You know, my sister, my older sister, who was 10 years older and would be 74 now, was one of three or four women that graduated from her law school class at George Washington University when she graduated in the early 60s. Now, more women graduate from GW Law School than men graduate from GW Law School. So I think, you know, that's something, too, that the more women that do it, the more women that will do it.
Well, Michael, you just... There's something called positive psychology, and the creator of it is Martin Seligman. He's actually still alive today. And he said, psychology from Freud on has always been about what's wrong with people, you know, what's not working. And he decided that he was going to take the glass half full thing and talk about people who live fulfilled lives. And one of the reasons that people do is, one, either because they have mentors or they have other people that persuade them and encourage them. And they also have the ability to overcome obstacles. So it's, you just mentioned one of the keys of success, which, and also what you're talking about too, Kidori, is confidence, right? And that comes from within, but it can also come by others supporting one another.
Absolutely. Well, if you can put a face to things and see that somebody else is doing this or somebody else came up, you know, pretty much, I came from a poverty family, so I broke all kinds of barriers, and that's why I love to go and talk to people, and they can put a face to some things. And, you know, I'm not a politician, but certainly if I had any kind of support, I would just love to start a program for girls young in elementary school and middle school, starting to teach them this confidence and believing in yourself and putting it to yourself. And, you know, when people can see that and they can hear that and they can put a face to it, then a lot of times it doesn't matter where you grow up at. You can turn out differently. You don't have to repeat the cycle or become a part of that cycle, like having a baby as a teenager and, you know, you can't support the baby and things like that. It does matter. It really matters when you can go and talk to people and touch them and show them something and give them some literature in their face. That makes a big difference. It really does.
I'm going to ask you a question, Kadori. Sorry, Michael. I mean this with respect. How did you have the temerity to ask for more for yourself?
I just knew coming up as a child how I was raised, you know, not having a lot of things that I felt like I should have had, needed, because there were so many kids that was not the way that I wanted to carry my life forward, even as a small child. And I think people know instinctively, even when kids, you know how they say, out of the mouth of the babe. These kids don't even know how the world works, but they will say things and they can see things that aren't right. So you know that. But if you don't have a support system, a lot of times people will repeat the cycle or fall into the trap. But me, myself, I just always wanted more, even as a child. So I just took steps in my life to be different, you know, than how I was, you know, raised. Because I joke about it at work sometimes, and I tell people, you know, I'm going to write a book about my life. But I said the way I was raised, technically, if I went the route of how I was raised right now, I would be a drug addict or a prostitute. But instead, I'm a professional nurse and I'm an entrepreneur. So it says something about the will and the drive of a person. And, you know, I've seen some positive things along the way when people would come to my high school and talk or different things like that that made me want to do something a little bit different. But I know that most people are not like that. Most people will repeat the cycle. And that's why I'm trying to get to a bunch of them at a younger age so that I can show them something different, maybe give them some workbooks and give them a lecture and start early with loving yourself. You have to love yourself like nobody else loves you. If you don't get that love at home, you can love yourself. And having a baby or doing some of these other things is not going to fix your problem. It's actually going to make your life worse and it's going to make your life harder. I'm just doing real talk because I've seen it and I've lived through it and this is just what it is. So I'm just trying to change one girl and one woman's life at a time.
Well, and you know, I think that's so important what you say, Kadori, about loving yourself, because, you know, you no matter how much positive things are out there in your environment, you also have to be in a position to receive them, right? You need to be in the right state of mind to accept it. You know, I remember one of the most difficult things I ever did is I started smoking non-filtered cigarettes when I was 14 years old, and I tried to quit like 100 times. And it never worked. But I got to a point one day when I really wanted to quit. And that really is what made the difference. I, you know, all the things that were out there to help me, all the tools that were out there to help me, it never worked until I said to myself, yeah, I've got to stop this. I don't want to someday have to explain to my children how I didn't live past 50 years old because I wasn't strong enough to quit, so I quit. But so I think your head has to be in the right place, or you're not ready to receive the information or the positive feedback. So yeah, I think that's very important. And I have two very strong girls. You know, I wish my son Nick would call in. Nick was in between the two girls. So, you know, he just feels that he was abused by his older sister and his younger sister.
I bet he was sandwiched mommied.
Yes. And if you would talk to Nick, I think he would say that he was raised in a gulag and the girls were raised, you know, in a castle, you know, that they got everything and he got nothing. He's got the middle child syndrome on top of it. But, I see that women are getting stronger and stronger. What do you think about the new outcry? I've got to tell you something that really amazes me. Is that all this stuff about sexual harassment that's come out. I've heard so many women tell me things that I never, you know, women I've known my whole life that about experiences that they've had that they've never talked about before. It seems right. to me that there's a new groundswell of empowering women. So what do you think of that? Do you think that this is positive and it's going to continue? And this is, you know, it's like a dam has opened up here.
Well, I think it's positive because people need to always speak out about things that are happening, and they need to do it sooner than later. But I know, for instance, in my profession, I've talked to some nurses as well as some, you know, doctors, and they were telling me when they went through their training and different things, and it was a male over them or a male attending physician, that they would, you know, touch them inappropriately or whatever, and they never spoke out because they felt like, right. if they did it and this was the chief, then there goes your career. You're not even going to make it out of residency. So I know that it's very pervasive. It happens a lot. But I want to empower women to be strong enough to speak out because, you know, if you speak out, you know, you can stop this stuff. But if you just sit there and be silent, then you got this 10-year, 20-year thing going on and you're mentally abused from it because you never spoke out and said anything. So this empowering, it cuts across all of that, you know, because it still happens today. And for me, being a registered nurse, I never knew the power of a nurse until I became a nurse 20 years ago. But if you don't have a good nurse when you go in anything, you're screwed. And I'm just talking real talk now, because these physicians, male or female, still more males than females, a lot of times they're not even there. The nurses, the eyes and ears. But with that still being a mostly male-dominated field, a lot of them have a lot of power trips, and they tend to, you know, just talk to the nurse any kind of way or whatever, and you have nurses still scared to speak up, even if the patient is suffering. A lot of times, oh, I don't want to call the doctor back again. Their own call, you call that doctor. I've had to do that in the middle of the night for patients before, and you have them. Well, what do you want now? Your own call, buddy, you're being paid. You need to take care of this patient. And if you don't, I'm going to write it up. And I will get that response, but it still happens to this day. But if you don't speak up and choose to be respected, That's a lot of it right there. One of my chapters say choose to be respected rather than like, because like will waver from moment to moment. But if you put your foot down and you choose to be respected, that's the best thing you can do for yourself. But we as women as a whole, we're always worrying about somebody liking us. Who cares
well,
if somebody
you know
likes
what?
You at the end of the day, you know?
Well, you know, I have a perfect example of that is that I'm a diabetic and I had an ulcer on my foot, and I went to a wound clinic, and every week they would put a cast on my leg, on my foot, and then they would take it off. And I said to my wife, I don't listen to the doctors. I look at the face of the nurse when she takes the bandage off. And I can tell by the way she looks at the wound whether it's getting better or not. The doctor's always telling me it's getting better. But it's the nurses, you know, that and I think that, you know, they did a survey a couple of years ago. Nurses are the most trusted profession in America. And I think that's why. I think that, you know, people trust them because they know they're right there on the front lines giving you the care that you need. And you really need to I've always found that I focus on them.
I think that's brilliant, Michael, and I disagree with you. I don't think nurses are trusted, just like teachers aren't trusted. Unfortunately, we have this God thing with doctors, and you know, and their egos help. And so, yeah, so when you get somebody who is compassionate and caring, I find it refreshing, but the exception.
Right. Well, and they add that to the profession. Let me tell you something. As you may know, Maria, I held my sister's hand every step through her chemotherapy and stuff, and I found a lot of cold doctors, but it was nurses that really added all the compassion in her treatment right to the very end. You know, so I can't say enough good things about nurses. We even have some in our family, and I think that
it's the truth.
Right about that.
It's the absolute truth. I've been in this profession for over 20 years, and I see it all the time. And you have some great doctors, and certainly we couldn't do what we do without them. They have to write the orders and stuff, but at the same time, if you don't have a good nurse, you are literally going to sink because you're there with the patient. you see the patient, you know what's going on with the patient, and you're the one a lot of times have to tell the doctor, look, this patient needs A, B, and C, or this is happening to the patient so that they can get the right treatment for the patient to oftentimes save their lives. So, you know, you have to have a good nurse. But she's right that most people don't trust the nurse because they look at the doctors as godlike figures. And sometimes they, you know, you get a good one, sometimes you get a bad one. That's just the luck of the draw.
Well, say, Kadori, I went because Michael, she said something that I thought might tickle your fancy because of the, I love the, how you always think about policy. You mentioned something about a program, and I'm thinking, with all this wealth of information that you have, what would that look like where you wanted to attract middle school, say, adolescent girls and help them with this journey as they go into their adolescence and then as they get out of it to stay in that self-care, love myself mode and not lose that and lose decades like I did?
I would like to have a program where I could go in once a semester and kind of have it in stages where you could speak to a small group, maybe, you know, 25 to 50 girls at a time, so you can have that one-on-one conversation with them, you know, offer them the workbook as well as the book, and then get to connect with them. And then the next semester, the same thing, just something that's there once a semester to, you know, it's somewhat of a mentorship as well. But if people can connect with you one-on-one somehow, you can change lives like that because they don't feel like they're just another number. They feel like they're somebody special. And I know that happened with me in my life early on when I was in junior high and I saw a nurse. I had never seen a nurse before, and it impacted me so much that I wanted to become a nurse because there was no one in my family that I could see or my neighborhood that was a nurse. So if you can't see it, you know, and touch it and put a face to it sometimes with most people, it's not really real. It's like it's on TV or it's for somebody else, not for me. So the program would look like something once a semester, go there, meet with these girls, have maybe a seminar or a time that they allotted for, and just, you know, get their names and get them involved and get them to write down their goals and what they love about themselves and just make it a once-a-semester thing where by the time they go through 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, that they feel more confident at the end of that program than they did at the beginning.
Well, you know, it's really funny that you say that, Kadori. I remember a woman who's very prominent in Washington, D.C. She's won a lot of awards, and she grew up in the poorest neighborhood in Washington. And I heard her give a lecture one day that she had won an award in high school and that they brought her up Connecticut Avenue to one of the wealthier neighborhoods in Washington to receive the award. And she said she never even knew this place existed. She said 5 miles from her home, and she said she thought Anacostia, which is the poorer part of Washington, the whole world was like that. And she said, you know, obviously she knew that there were other places, and she was educated, and she knew there were other places in the world, but she didn't know they were so close, that right across the river was an entirely different city. And I think that's so important that you need to show them that they're, you know, what's out there. I think maybe the greatest, one of the greatest gifts my mom ever gave me is that I grew up in North New Jersey as a kid. She used to take me to Broadway. She was into theater, and she used to take me to Broadway. And you know, I can't thank her enough for exposing me to good music and good theater. It so enriched my life. And I would have never stumbled upon it by myself. Maybe I would have, maybe I wouldn't have.
But you know what I'm thinking is that there are natural partners here, like the Girl Scouts or Boys and Girls Clubs, that could be in part of their curriculum. I mean, the Girl Scout mission is courage, confidence, and character. That's, you know, so, I mean, that falls right into what it is that you're talking about. And then Boys and Girls Clubs, you've got them captive, you know, after school.
Exactly.
And those organizations already exist.
Yeah,
like to get a badge for as a Girl Scout, you know, a badge of confidence or something like that.
Well, I've got to tell you that we tried to reach out to this girl, but we couldn't find her. but there was a little girl here in Washington. Actually, she's Jake Tapper's daughter. Jake Tapper, you might know, is a CNN person that hosts. And she put together a merit badge for girls that raise their hands and ask questions. And you had to raise your hands and ask questions so many times to get the merit badge. But the Girl Scouts, she created the badge, and the Girl Scouts of America accepted it, and it's like the girl assertiveness badge. And, you know, we tried to reach out to her parents to see if we could get her on the show, because I thought it was such a brilliant idea, right? That, and I think you have to raise your hand five times and ask a question in a public forum or something to get the badge. But I think things like that are a great idea.
They are, because there's no question that's a dumb question unless it's not asked. So, yeah, that's a lot, too, to get people to even open their mouth to ask questions. It's a big deal. Yes.
And that's another thing with girls, you know, that I think, because they are so much more verbal to begin with. I mean, at least, you know, my son can go a month with only saying a few words.
You mean grunts, right.
But, you know, sometimes it bothers me to see that this empowerment takes the form of trying to get them to do what boys do. Do you see that? I mean, that instead of making programs for specifically for girls to empower them, we just say, let's treat them like boys, and that'll empower them.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot through my whole life, and that's why the women and girls empowerment alone is the way to go, so that they know that this is something that you need to be focused on for women and girls that's separate from what boys or men have. Absolutely, yes.
I would agree, because there is a difference in the gender in general. Yeah. I mean, I was a tomboy growing up and an athlete, but I can't tell you how many times my parents would tell me to pipe down and to back off and to stop running for office and to, you know, all the stuff that I did, because I wanted to be a leader and I wanted to be head of the class and I wanted all those things. But I also had the luxury of going to a Catholic all-girls high school where they did empower us, because we didn't have to defer to the boys and for popularity and the class clowns and all that stuff. So I do think that single sex education has some value and merit in that regard.
Well, every woman, and every woman, I'm sorry to interrupt, but every woman I've ever heard that has that experience says that, Maria.
Is that right?
Every girl that I ever knew that went to an all-girl high school, I have several friends that went to Catholic girls' high schools, and even some that went to colleges that were I guess there are fewer and fewer of those today, but you know, there used to be several colleges as I was growing up that were, like Vassar was,
and Wesleyan,
still all, yeah, were all always women. I mean, not anymore, at least Vassar's not, but I've always heard them say that, so I agree with you. You know, and with my kids, my son was an athlete, and he was a good soccer player, good basketball player, great, you know, just a natural kind of athlete. And both my girls, neither one of them were good athletes, but they both went into dance. And I said, great, you know, it's the same thing. Tap dancing or playing soccer, or you know what I mean? It dance just fit them. And you know what? They're both, one just turned 25, one's 20, and they're both still dancers.
Nice.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah.
Because my daughter wanted to do cheerleading, and I said, you can do cheerleading in the fall, and then you're going to play a sport in the spring.
I was
going to wave pom-poms and jump in a little skirt. Not that it isn't a sport. I know that cheerleading is a sport, especially with the athleticism that they require now, but I didn't want her to always be thinking she's the support person. No, let somebody else cheer for you.
Exactly.
Yep. So tell us a little bit about your nonprofit, since we're getting on in the show here, and I want you to tell us a little bit about Helping Hands and what they do and the other stuff that you've started.
Okay. So Kadori Helping Hands, I formed that in July of 2017, and I did that to help people in need. In July of 2017, did a back-to-school backpack drive where I filled up backpacks with school supplies and took them to a local shelter in my area where some kids needed that. And right after July and August, Hurricane Harvey hit in my area, the Houston area. So I went on from that to giving out, you know, tons of personal care items to people. I fed like over 100 people one day that were displaced in a hotel that had lost their homes. And then the latest effort that I did with Fedora Helping Hands was a brand new coat drive for Christmas, but it extended through the winter where I provided some brand new coats to people that were in need. And I started the charity because years ago when my children were small, like 2 and 3 years old, before I became a nurse, I was homeless and I had to live in a shelter for a couple of weeks. So I always had that in the back of my mind that if I ever, you know, got money or got anything, I would want to start a shelter and give back. So that's what Kathori Helping Hands does. It helps people in need.
That's beautiful.
Well, I think, yes, it is. And I think it's important to point out that it shows that you can do something. You can go in the community. You don't need to join an organization. You can do something yourself. And, you know, Kidori, yeah. my mother was put in an orphanage when she was during the Depression. And I found out later in life when I did some research that this was not an unusual thing back in those days for Catholic families to put their – and my mom was put in an orphanage for a little while – because she was one of four girls, and then she was taken back out of the orphanage when things got better for her family. But every year of my life as a kid, she took me to that orphanage on their feast day. It was St. Anthony's, and every year she took me, and I never understood it until I got older and found out she had been there, because she wanted me to know she wanted me to feel that experience so that I would have some compassion for people that were less fortunate than we
exactly.
were.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
So tell us, is there a website or something people can go to find out more about what you're doing and maybe to help in some ways?
Yes, absolutely. My website is Kidori Brand. That's CadoriBrand.net. And on that website, everything's on there. My book is on there. My charity's on there, Kidori Helping Hands. My gear, the I Love Me gear is on there. Just everything that I'm doing updated is on that website, KidoriBrand.net.
Right.
And what a wonderful example you are for exactly practicing what you preach. You're walking the walk. You're talking the talk. You're providing inspiration. You're inspiring to me. And I'm not your target demographic.
Thank
so
you.
I just think it's beautiful. It really is. It's just lovely. I mean, it's fabulous. A feel-good story from start to finish.
Yeah.
What's your next project?
Well, when you do things from the heart, that's what happens. Is, you know, when people tap into who they really are and they do things from the heart, that's the response you're going to get. You know, so it's all from the heart, and it's all to help people, all of it, the book, everything. So I'm just a helpful type person, and I want to see people better and improve their lives however I can help.
So I have another question, Michael, if you don't mind. We have
a little bit
of time. One of my colleagues was raised similarly. She's the eldest of five, and poverty and et cetera, and on food stamps and what have you, and she's gone on to be a self-made woman because she found out early on that not only was she intelligent, but she was gifted in math, and that was her ticket to her bachelor's degree and her master's degree and now her PhD degree. And but her other four siblings fell into the same path that her parents were in, with alcohol and drugs and crime and in and out of the system and stuff. And I'm wondering if some of your family members, and you don't have to answer if you don't want to, also succumb to that too.
Well, mentally, I would say mentally, financially, just about everybody broke through some of the barriers as far as the poverty level. I don't think anybody is still in the poverty level, maybe one, but mentally they're still in that same place. Like they have a lot of gifts and talents and they don't use them because of how we were raised and the limitations that they put on themselves, and they just don't believe it, you know, and they, in fact, can't even understand how I'm doing what I'm doing. A couple of them, like, why'd you write that book to do that? Like, oh, you're going to bring a spotlight on us. I'm like, really? This is what I wrote from within me. I'm trying to help people, and so, you know, needless to say, anytime you're elevating, you have to kind of distance yourself from some of that stuff. So unfortunately, some of them I have to love from a distance. But mentally, it really, crush them, I think, that way, because they're not able to really spread their wings and fly like they should do with whatever gifts and talents they have because of, you know, the limitations that they put on themselves. So it's always about your mind first. Like we're talking about, you know, getting people to love themselves and all that stuff. It's what you think in your mind controls everything. So if right. you tell yourself, I can't do this or I'm not this or that, that's what you're going to be. My last chapter in the book says, who are you? You are exactly who you say you are. So if you tell yourself you're this or you're that, that's what you are, and that's where you're going to stay mentally.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show, Kadoria. I hope you'll come back, you know, because this is an important topic. And I encourage people to go to your website and our listeners and to check out your book and check out what you're doing. Again, it's KadoriBrand.net. And we appreciate you having on the show. And Kadori said it. You've got to love yourself. That's the most important thing. So we're going to leave you tonight with a classic song from Aretha Franklin. It's all about respect.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Kadori.
Thank you.
And to our listeners.
Thank you all for having me.
Thanks.
Continued success.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Thanks.
Give the people their right to vote.